wake up in the morning. I believe I'll dust my broom. It's 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Now, this is the roundtable. We haven't been on for a few days. Something's been going on. I'm not sure what it is. We're back with you. It's the roundtable panel. There's plenty to discuss today. Before we get started, this is Ray. I'm in for Joe. Now, let me tell you a story about a friend of mine. He goes to vacation in Ireland. He's having a wonderful time. His face is being done in the top of a Guinness stout, and it's this amazing technological miracle. He's having a great time. Next thing you know, last day of the trip, he falls down a flight of stairs. Yeah, he's able to make it home. Now, I would not want to be the guy next to him for 6 hours on a flight after falling down a flight of stairs. But anyway, he's brought to the hospital here. On Wednesday, he had surgery to repair a bilateral complete tear of his quadriceps, which I think his Olympic hurdling career is now finished. But he's not expected back for a few weeks, so bear with us. Joe is going to be okay, and we're thinking of you, Joe, and try not to listen too much and get too upset. It'll be all right, and we'll hear from you soon. Now, you can join this conversation at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. I got to tell you, given all that has happened this week, we will get a stack of letters. So if there was any day to be concise, keep it short to one good thought, this is the day. Nice short letter, panel@wamc.org. Try to make it so we can read it. Now, the panel today, it's a great one. We have investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. How you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Founder of Beyond Plastics, former EPA regional administrator Judith Eng. Hello, Judith.
Good morning.
Siena College economics professor Aaron Pasidi is here. Hello.
Good morning.
Now, when you say, we always have this discussion in the newsroom, economics. How do you say it?
I say it economics.
All right, so we'll call it economics then.
Okay.
I believe that David Soares, Albany County DA, is going to be here. He's not here yet.
Do you want me to fill in for him? Hi, I'm David Soares.
All right, that's good. Thank you. And then WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I did talk to Joe this morning on the phone. I've been talking to him every day. He's not happy about all of this, but I point out that many of us have gone through this kind of thing. It's not our fault. It just happened.
Right.
He'll be fine. And we'll be here opening our arms to get him back when he comes. And I'm going to go visit him in the hospital in Saratoga today.
Okay.
Because I have to tell you, the Berkshire Ramblers are playing at Cafe Lena right around the corner. So it'll be a great opportunity to go and see him and then to talk to all the WAMCers who show up tonight at Cafe Lena at 8 o'clock.
Okay, and so are you the main act? You do a couple of sets, or are you doing one set tonight?
No, we're it. We don't do that other thing.
Really? All right. Well,
No, that's not our style. It's a not-for-profit, and we want to support them, and we are.
Well, that's terrific.
Berkshire Ramblers are going to be doing that.
And when you go, before you go to the gig, pass along our regards to Joe.
I certainly will. I think he knows it. I think he knows how we all feel.
Aaron, you have a gig coming up, too.
Yeah. My bluegrass band, Big Stone Gap, is playing at the Brown's Wallumsack Tap Room tonight in Hoosick Falls from 6 until 9.
That is so great. Now, you and Alan's band ought to do a double bill someday.
Yeah.
You know?
We don't do that.
I was going to say you would be opening for us, obviously. But,
Now, already people are grumbling. Why don't they get to the news at hand? So let's get to the news at hand.
But first, I just really want to send love and support to Joe. You know, this is, he'll bounce back.
Right.
He's a strong guy, but boy, impeachment hearings and a serious fall all in the same week. That's terrible.
You know, Joe, this is a good excuse to
double up on the painkillers.
Or have an Irish coffee for breakfast every morning.
There you go. Democrats and Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee made their closing arguments yesterday. Adam Schiff, House Intelligence Committee chairman, laid out what the committee has learned over the course of 7 hearings. Schiff said the president believes he is above the law and beyond accountability as he pushed Ukraine to investigate Democrats and withheld military aid. Top Republican on the panel, California Representative David Nunes, called the hearings a show trial, said they had a predetermined verdict. In Thursday's hearings, we've heard from so many people, but yesterday, fairly compelling work by former National Security Advisor Fiona Hill, also David Holmes. Who wants first today?
I heard a terrific sound coming from Judith. She said, so she should go first.
Well, Nunes is just playing to the audience of one in Fox News. I mean, I only caught parts of the hearings this week because I was working in the daytime. And what was so striking is you had such a careful presentation of fact witnesses. And then it was so bizarre to just see many of the Republicans, most notably Nunes and Jim No Jacket Jordan, just doing sound bites. I mean, they may as well just like flipped off their glasses, look to the camera and say, this is for Fox and Friends. So that was, you know, not surprising, but disappointing. I thought Fiona Hill was brilliant. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with a lot of her views on foreign affairs. She's quite conservative, but it doesn't matter. She showed up. She did her constitutional duty. She told the truth. And I read this great comment on Twitter yesterday about Fiona Hill. Fiona Hill is the kind of detail-oriented badass who makes sure that the tires have the precise correct air pressure before she drives the bus over you. I thought that summed up her testimony.
You know, I just got the check tire pressure light on my car. You think she'd come over and have a look?
She knew what she was talking about.
You know,
she was honest.
I thought the interesting thing was that she brought up something so explicit that I think was kind of in the back of everybody's mind, but the way she said it was that, you know, buying into this conspiracy theory that it was Ukraine who was involved in hacking the 2016 election plays right into Putin and Russia's hands. And that was a really bold statement, I thought so. I mean, in addition to everything else, that was a major contribution that kind of, I don't want to say blows the lid off of this, but
I was riveted by the impeachment proceedings, and I watched every minute of it. Unlike the Democratic debate, which was unfreaking watchable.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
The women. It wasn't just Fiona Hill who was great. It was also Maria Yovanovitch, who just bravely and forthrightly said what was going on. They listened to all of that theater from Nunes and Jordan and Elise Stefanik, just said, "I'm not here to answer that questions. I'm here to tell you what I know." It was really refreshing, and it's depressing to me that it will go nowhere.
We'll get to that as well. There have been meetings about strategy.
You're jumping ahead.
Yes, you are. But it's foreshadowing, really.
Yeah. It's foreshadowing.
Alan, what'd you make of the whole thing?
Well, I was very interested in tacking on to what Judith, I believe, just said, and that is Putin went on television in a rare thing and talked about how wonderful this was, that everybody understood it was the Ukrainians and not the Russians, and that they were off the hook, and he was very glad about that. If there was anything that was confirmatory about the Russians having done it, that was it.
And I just want to emphasize Rosemary's point. It was certainly Maria Yovanovitch and Fiona Hill, but also Jennifer Williams, who works for Pence, and Laura Cooper in the Pentagon. The women really set the tone for this hearing. And then you have John Bolton with his $2 million book deal, too cowardly to respond to a congressional subpoena. He let his subordinates, Fiona Hill and Vindman, come and talk about what he really should be talking about. And it's incredible that he can ignore a congressional subpoena and nothing happens.
Particularly when he's had such strong feelings about it and what he said, what Fiona Hill said, he said about this being a drug deal. I don't want any involvement. You would think that he could at least rise to the level of, you know, serving the nation and telling the truth when it really matters.
Except I agree with all this, but he's not the only one who gets blamed. Why are the Democrats not pressing for him to be there? Also Pence and Pompeo. And Rudy Giuliani.
Everybody.
Yeah, Mulvaney. All of these guys who should be testifying.
Well, here's David Soares. Come on in, sir.
Hey.
You know, I think, though, that part of that may be, Rosemary, that they don't want to drag it too long. They know that there is an election ahead, a presidential election, so it's possible the Democrats say, well, yeah, we could fight in court, Bolton and Giuliani and everybody, and make them appear, drag this on for a really long time.
There may be some political
expediency, though, go ahead, Alan.
And by the way, I don't think we know that they could really succeed in making them appear. You know, you got a Supreme Court of the United States. These questions come before them. You've got a conservative Trumpian majority on it right now. And they figured, we got enough. Let's go ahead and let's just do this thing. I'm fascinated by what happens when it goes to trial. Now, yesterday, Trump brings the people who would be most likely to flee the ship to the White House for tea and cookies or whatever he gives them.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously concerned enough about what they might do to bring them in. This has not been going well for Trump. You see it in his face. You see, hear his quivering voice when he goes out under the helicopter in a way that the bombast has disappeared. I think he knows that there's really going to be trouble. And you got a Supreme Court justice who wants to be seen as a good guy, Mr. Roberts, the Republicans are having this counter narrative now that they're going to bring all these people. They're going to insist that at the trial the Bidens appear as witnesses. What a bunch of baloney! And they want it done in 2 weeks.
All right, let's talk to somebody who just arrived, Albany County District Attorney David Soares. What kept
you're
you
5 minutes what late? And it's the walk of shame.
You know, I just have to say that this traffic that takes place right now on Swan Street,
yeah,
and you're coming off of it's just too much.
You know, we don't want to solve this. What about another road diet? That's always great, isn't it?
Another road diet.
Yeah, we'll have another road diet. That always helps.
Well, you know,
More buses so people can get out of cars.
That's true. I was listening here on my way in, and I have to say you guys all sound amazing.
Really?
Ray, I would have to say that the stock for the beer that Joe was consuming has just plummeted.
Why?
Because you mentioned that.
That was 2 days before he fell down the stairs.
I'm just saying, man.
This wasn't William Holden. This wasn't
a
lost weekend, as far as we know. No.
Look, watching these proceedings over the course of this week has been quite amazing. And I think that I think that if the Democrats were able to present a trial, and this is what we have to appreciate. They were responsible for presenting a public trial without a single shred of documents or information from the executive branch.
Right. Let alone cooperation.
Okay. And what they were able to do was present a case where if you were a juror, you would say that the prosecution of this case, they were able to meet their burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Was this analogous to a grand jury? In other words, prior to an actual trial, would this be analogous to that?
It's somewhat analogous, except you don't have the clown show that you have. You don't have jurors who sit there and are skeptical about everything that's being presented to them. People are, you know, they have the ability to weigh evidence either in favor of or against, but you know you're not grandstanding like many of the people that you observed this week engaging in. I thought that the witnesses were amazing, and I thought that they presented themselves in a way that demonstrated absolutely zero partisanship. The fact that all of these witnesses had worked for both Democratic and Republican presidents and administrations, and these were just people who love their work and their career, I thought that they really presented a wonderful case for the American public this week.
So now it's time to remind that this is not a jury that will be hearing the case. It is the U.S. Senate, which is overwhelmingly Republican and determined to protect the president, not to give justice. And William Hurd, is that same, the guy from Texas, who is leaving, who has no access to grind anymore, he said, I just don't see anything here that makes me think he did anything.
Yeah, but you don't know where he's leaving.
Right.
It's the revolving door where he's maybe lining up a lobbying gig and he doesn't want to annoy Trump or the Republican Party.
That doesn't help, Judith. People like that in the Senate.
Right, but I think it matters that Trump is going to be impeached. I have no expectation that even one or two Republican senators is going to stand up.
Alan, you think anybody will jump in there on the Republican side?
Well, look, no, I don't think that that's going to be the problem. The real thing here is that the Republicans were the minority and were pathetic in Jordan and Stefanik and the rest of the kind of stuff that they were saying. It was literally pathetic. Now you get to the Senate, where, as Rosemary just pointed out, it goes the other way around, right? So now they're in the minority. What will be allowed to the Democrats there? But this time, the Democrats, who will be in the minority, will be right, as opposed to the Republicans, who really were pathetic in this procedure.
I wouldn't at all have any high levels of confidence that Susan Collins or Mitt Romney right. are going to save the day. But yeah. we just want an airing of the facts, and this is this is a historical significant moment, the first impeachment in a first term. And no, it's not going to push Trump out of office, but it was going to remind a lot of independent voters on Election Day, just like they needed reminding, how corrupt this administration is. I also think it's going to mobilize a lot more Democrats and independents to come out and vote for the Democrat, no matter who she or he is.
In the Senate. In the Senate election.
No, I'm skipping ahead to the November 2020.
Yeah, no, but yes, but I'm also saying that the Senate could flip on the basis of what these folks are doing right now. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is an imperative point.
But, look, I think if you keep your ear to the ground, what you should be hearing right now are a couple of ticking time bombs, right? There's something that's going to happen, what people are saying it could possibly happen on Monday, which is going mm-hmm. to be a judicial ruling on whether or not Mr. McGahn would have been required to testify and turn over materials. You're going to see the floodgates open. If that decision should come back favorably for Congress, right, you're going to see the floodgates open. That's one ticking time bomb. I'll talk about the other ticking time bomb.
Why
floodgates? We have to take a quick break here, gentlemen. And David Soares, you really get to be a radio pro. You picked up my signal very well. I set a small fire and, you know. It's the roundtable. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armao, Judith Ink, Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, and you, panel@wamc.org is the email address. There is a lot to talk about today, a lot more to come, and more of your letters. Once again, the email address is panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
You know I can see $100 bankroll. Ain't nothing free.
I don't know if I should be saying this because, you know, Aaron Pasitti has a gig tonight. Alan Chartok has a gig tonight. But John Primer and James Armstrong are going to be at the Linda tonight. That's what we were listening to there. If you want to find out more about that one, thelinda.org. And then, of course, Aaron Pasitti is playing in Hoosick Falls. Alan is in Saratoga.
Just as good.
It's a very artful
Choose your
group.
County.
It's the roundtable panel. They're all gifted. David Soares is here, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Ink, Rosemary Armao, and Alan Chartok. You, of course, at panel@wamc.org. Quick correction, and then a comment from our district attorney friend, and then Alan has a couple more things to say, and then we're going to read letters. Judith, the correction.
I made a mistake, and I said that this is the first president to go through impeachment in his first term. The first president was Andrew Johnson.
Okay.
I forgot that. I was just thinking Nixon and Clinton. Forgive me, listeners.
Now, David Soares wanted to bring up one more point here before we get into letters. And, David, what do you want to say?
No, look, this is like a soap opera that we continue to observe with routine every day. And there are so many things that are happening all at once that really can help to explain some of the behavior that we see that sometimes has us scratching our heads. We have two bodies in our government right now that are pitted against one another. But there's a whole host of other independent things that are occurring out around the perimeter of this this conflict that we should be mindful of. I did mention to you the first one being a decision that was going to be forthcoming from the D.C. Circuit about Don McGahn and whether or not his testimony, his notes, and his record should be turned over, you know, to Congress. That was one. The other, of course, is the indictment that stems out of the Southern District of New York over Mr. Giuliani's two friends, one of them being Les Parnas. Now, Parnas, ironically enough, if you're reading these various articles that are out there, and they're not the most mainstream articles, but they are out there in the periphery, you have his attorney actually making comments in the paper about certain stories, one of them being whether or not Parnas was with Giuliani when Giuliani had conversations with the Ukrainian president and his aide. And Parnas was, okay, where the issue of investigation into Burmeesa in exchange Just the announcement, by the way. Not the actual investigation, but just the announcement.
That's been much discussed, yeah, yes.
Because we haven't even established the new Minister of Justice in Ukraine yet. So just the announcement. And there you have a person who is sitting under indictment right now who demonstrates through his comments, through his attorney, his willingness to really turn in some information in exchange for a favorable disposition in the Southern District. That is something that we really need to pay attention to.
And to build on that, there was a report by Betsy Woodruff yesterday, a very credible reporter, that Parnas joined Giuliani at a meeting in Madrid when they met with Ukrainian officials, and Giuliani introduced Parnas as his colleague.
Yes.
Alan, you want to make a couple of comments before I run to the letters here?
No, go to the letters. They're much more important.
Well, this sir, is from Robert. Robert from Castleton asks, did Sondland really pay $1 million to Trump's inauguration committee in order to secure a spot in his administration? If so, why do you think he's testified now when so many of Trump's inner circle have refused?
Because he doesn't want to go to jail.
Yeah, exactly, Judith. I mean, you know, he took a look at the situation and said, this is really bad. I'm going to protect myself. And he did a good job of it, I thought.
I want to ask David, how credible do you think the Republican counterattack on Sondland was, that he just thought, he just inferred that that's what Trump wanted, a quid pro quo? He said it openly. This was a quid pro quo. It was a bribe. And then they said, well, did the president tell you that? You know, did you get a written letter from him? And so the idea was, You just thought this. This is you, not the president. How credible is that?
That's really not credible at all, considering the fact that these two had conversations about 24 times. Mm-hmm. And according to the aide who happened to be sitting there, David
Holmes.
Yeah. Holmes testified as to this kind of rapport that the two of them had built, president and Sondland. Right, where they talk to each other like, hey, by the way, the president here, he loves your, you know, expletive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the fact that you'd have a person in the form of the European ambassador sitting at a restaurant using his own cell phone, putting in a call directly
to the president.
The president of the United States would indicate to you how welcomed his calls were and how often that they spoke. Because if you can also remember, there was testimony by other ambassadors that had been in a position longer
saying they had never had any kind
of direct communication with the president
so
of the United
that,
States under
does that
any
sort
term.
Of nuance, that sort of those details, does that get through to people? Would people watching the hearings get that? Would other Republicans sitting there resisting this information, do they get it? Do they know how flimsy it sounds?
Let me just give you an idea of how tedious these things can be sometimes. Because even when you're talking about a jury in a regular, you know, courthouse, right? These cases get overwhelming. And the amount of time that you are relying on someone to be paying attention to unless, of course, it's a, you know, homicide with really interesting
riveting
facts.
Details, yeah.
But, you know, if we're talking tax cases or white collar cases or cases like this where you're talking about white collar crime, extortion, they can be tedious. And so I think that's the reason why Adam Schiff's closing remarks were also well timed and important, because what he did was he tried to bring back all of the testimony and the important elements into his closing remarks, while at the same time pointing out the absurdity of the defense's
arguments. And he's a prosecutor.
And he's a prosecutor, and he's showing it.
So, okay, you know, after Watergate, there was a series of government reforms put into place, and a bunch of reformers were elected to Congress, like Ned Pattison in Rensselaer County, if everyone remembers his great tenure.
There, yeah.
Yep, I'm old. I think looking ahead 1, 2, 3 years from now, after the national nightmare known as the Trump presidency is over, I think you're going to see a lot of reforms, including in the Foreign Service. The way these ambassadorships work is, if you're in a real serious problem in a country, you get a career professional like Maria Yovanovitch or Bill Taylor. And then there's a whole other level of ambassadorships where you can buy them. Mm-hmm. Typically, they're sent to be ambassadors to a Caribbean nation. Why they thought Sondland could do the EU, I don't know. But the fact that he, you know, had a cell phone conversation on the sidewalk of a cafe with the president, with everyone listening, we're going to see a whole bunch of reforms in the way ambassadors are selected. But let's answer that question for you about Sondland. One at a time. Who wants to go?
You guys
I want to go.
Ah.
One last thing, and that is we do know that Sondland paid that $1 million for that spot.
Yes, we did.
But the one thing you got to know about Sondland when you heard him speaking, he's a smart guy. I mean, he's a very smart guy. You get ambassadors who are dummies. The other thing I wanted to say is that, you know, that after the fact, what you find is that some of these reforms that get passed, like Watergate, disappear. For example, where's the special prosecutor law that was once there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was changed.
You have to hit the refresh button every few decades.
And, you know, Sondland made a calculated decision of, do I stick with the president? And if he does fall, then I'm on the outs. And if I testify,
go to jail.
I'm on the out. So it's just this is damage control on his part. I think that explains.
So two things, Alan. I think first of all, your question about where the special prosecutor is. My question to you is: do you really trust William Barr to appoint a special prosecutor oversee, you know, something of this significance that's taking place in the country?
That's why the House is doing this, right? Because DOJ would not
absolutely
take action.
Absolutely. So that's that's the first issue.
Exactly.
When you're talking about the motives of Sondland and why, you know, the European Union, let's not forget that this is a businessman who owns an empire of hotels, right? There's like the Providence Hotels, I think, is part of that organization. But he views the EU as fertile ground for his, you know, expansion of his empire, which is precisely the reason why he happened to be sitting there. The one thing that, though, I want to point out for the public, I mean, that should give you some assurance, is that if you listen to the true professionals, right, the people who are responsible, who represent our State Department, there is a chain where there is redundancy, there is efficiency, and that chain has worked, you know, with respect to every single president that's ever occupied the White House. What I thought was interesting was Fiona Hill's description of the domestic political errand, right? Mm-hmm. That created
devastating
phrase.
That's what set off the alarm bell for Bolton, yeah. I think. He said, go get a lawyer now.
Exactly. But that's a devastating phrase, but it's also a description of how something was created that splintered off of what is supposed to be the most devoted process that we rely on as a country for our national security.
You know, this panel is officially on fire. That was all in response to the first letter. And there's a stack of them, oddly enough. Neil writes, if a tree falls, according to 538, Trump's net approval has improved from minus 13.3 to minus 11.6 over the past week, in spite of evidence, overwhelming evidence, Neil says, that he hijacked U.S. foreign policy for his own personal political benefit. I simply can't understand it. And that is from Neil in Wendell.
Listen, all right, man, fine. That's 1 week.
Yeah,
I mean,
man, listen, I'm just going to say something right now to Neil. You know, given what's happened to Joe Donahue, please let's not start our letters off by saying if a tree falls. Just stay away from the whole falling thing, all
He's
right?
He's a mighty oak, that Donahue. Let's take a break here. Our North Country Bureau Chief, Pat Bradley's here.
Wow.
We'll offer some insight on Stefanik against Cobb and what's going on there. Panel at WAMC.org if you want to email us, and I promise we will read more of these. We have Rosemary Armeo, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Enk, Alan Chartok, and you and me, and we'll take a break. You like those blues? I like those blues.
Cool.
That's a John
Primer. Hey, Raymond, I did want to say one thing by way of an announcement.
Right.
Because of the racking up of this whole debate over Trump.
Yes.
We'll be going commencing on next Monday, I believe. I may be wrong, but commencing next Monday to the panel will be extended to 11 o'clock. In the morning,
I hope we get time and a half for that.
Yes, exactly. More bagels,
right.
But we have heard
there
from
are bagels.
No, there
yeah,
aren't.
What?
Oh,
but
we
no, there aren't.
But we've heard. We cut that out years ago.
Okay.
But there are a lot of people who have asked us to do this, and so now we're doing it.
All right, so fair enough. That begins on Monday. It's an it'll be a panel that goes from 9-ish to 11-ish.
Eventually, we'll be on till 3 p.m.
Right.
Right.
Be like a Jerry Lewis telethon. Hey, North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley is here. Hello, Pat. How are you?
Hi, Ray. How are you guys? This is so cool. I haven't been in here for a round table in
ages. You notice it's not really round, right?
A heptagon.
Well, it's, yeah, it's not square, though.
Well, sometimes it is, believe me.
But we are.
There you go. Wow.
You know, Pat, you've been following closely the Elise Stefanik and Tedra Cobb race, and what's happening?
It's getting interesting, especially in the wake of the impeachment hearings. All of a sudden, Tedra Cobb got an influx of money over the weekend, and they say it's because of Stefanik. So,
okay.
On the other hand, isn't Stefanik also getting more money from the dyed-in-the-wool Republicans?
Yes, she is. I tried to get the total amount from her campaign spokesman, and he would not give out totals, just saying
that means
that,
it's not $1 million like,
well,
Tedra Cobb raised.
That's hard to tell because he said that they were quote unquote overwhelmed. But Stefanik today is tweeting that they raised over $500,000 in 2 hours last night. So,
because she was on Fox last night.
Exactly.
Yeah, she was on Fox last night. So it's entirely possible that they're raking in huge sums of money, too.
Well, let's just put it that they'll both have a lot of money. Let's talk about the makeup of the electorate in that district.
It's a huge area. It's geographically one of the largest electoral districts, congressional districts, east of the Mississippi. It is 17,000 square miles.
Oh, my word.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah. It goes all the way from Watertown in the west to Lake Champlain, Plattsburgh, and Queensbury on the east.
Wow.
And basically down towards the Syracuse region, north to the Canadian border. So if you look at it, the southern portions of it tend more Republican. The eastern, northeastern part, you know, the Glens Falls, Plattsburgh area tend more Democratic, and I'm not quite sure what Watertown does, unfortunately.
Swims.
Yeah. But that's where Fort Drum is, and a lot of military areas do tend slightly more Republican areas.
But sheer numbers, Republicans to Democrats, what do we have there?
Republicans outnumber the Democrats, I believe last time was about 2-1.
Now, Bill Owens was an outlier. He won twice, right? And he won in a three-person race the first time, right?
The first
and then
time.
Won re-election.
And that was the first time in about 250 years that a Democrat had won.
Wow.
So, Alan, if you were a betting person, you would say Stefanik wins.
No, I think Stefanik is going to lose. I think this is going to be an over. I've said that before to much consternation because it certainly bucks the opinion of most because it is a Republican district. There's no question that there are more reds than blues. Nevertheless, I think this is going to turn out to be a Trump disaster for the president and for the people around him. And I think the fact that she has been defending him publicly the way that she did, which was unnecessary, I think is going to cost her.
That's my question, Pat. Why do you think she picked now to drop the cloak of a moderation and bipartisan and come out as a Devin Nunes type firebrand?
Because I think she's seeing, it's a strategy, I think, that she sees that will benefit her career moving forward. At the Tedra Cobb event in Plattsburgh this week, I was talking to somebody who he kind of calls himself like a part-time political scientist. And he says he doesn't see her wanting to stay in Congress forever. Mm-hmm. He sees this as a career strategy that where if the Republicans stay in power in the White House, that maybe she's angling for something in the White House, a cabinet position.
Absolutely. There are so many positions in the White House because people
she
just
could be acting to
take her
staff.
Choice.
Yeah, for
well,
2 weeks.
She's also very young and aggressive. And if you, you know, you look at the people who've been in Congress for decades, they don't necessarily have chairmanships yet. You know, how long does it take to get a chairmanship? 30, 40, 50 years sometimes.
Yeah. I think what's important here to also consider is the fact that she's not the only person that is morphing into this Trumpian creature, because the entire Republican Party has morphed into that Trumpian creature. Mm-hmm. And I think if you want to look for more examples, you just have to look to Nikki Haley, right?
Oh, yeah.
There is a calculus there, and I'm talking about her pivot is even more pronounced than Stefanik's pivot.
But I think it's a bad calculus for both Stefanik and Nikki Haley. The Trump ship is sinking. And they just bought their tickets in the last few weeks.
Well, I also
most people are getting off the sinking.
We
Titanic.
May see the
well
we, may, we may see the ship is sinking because of what we consume in terms of our media diet. We may see the ship sinking. You have an entire network, right, that is out there that is a propaganda machine, and for people who are consuming that kind of media diet, they're not seeing this as the Trumpian
ship sinking. I agree.
They're seeing this as we got to fight for this guy because the Democrats and the deep state are coming after him.
The Trump political ship might be sinking, but there's the, like Judith mentioned at the beginning, there's the revolving door of what happens afterwards. So you show some loyalty now, no matter what happens to Trump, these people are going to be able to curry favor with him down the road, or
now,
with other hardcore Trump-supporting Republicans.
Well, and it's also, I think, the face, you know, getting down to the base aspects of it, the FaceTime of it. Elise Stefanik is now getting how much publicity on Fox News, which is also going to advance her career, whether she is able to stay in Congress or move on to something else. You know, a lot of people being very cynical look at the impeachment hearings and it's like, oh, it's FaceTime for the politicians. Well, take a look at what's happening with Elise Stefanik. She's all over the media now.
Well, I thought she was one of the most aggressive people that were on that panel.
And no question.
Doing the questioning. And she made the best possible use of her time, because in addition to attacking the articulating the talking point, she was also attacking Adam Schiff, which
one other thing
that
that's
audience,
very endlessly, one other thing that's very important, and that is we all know that Trump is in trouble with suburban women and with women. That's number one. And we also hear constant rumors now that Pence will not be the re-upped as the vice president.
Did you say re-upped?
So, re-upped. So therefore, it seems to me that the two that we have seen coming forward, I think it's a big pitch, but it would bring young people and women if Stefanik thought that she could possibly fit in there. I think it's much more likely that
you
Nikki
mean
Haley,
as vice president.
Yes, I think it's much
Judith,
more likely.
Judith, you're shaking your head. Let the record show.
Nikki Haley
really
has that.
No. Not vice president.
Now,
I think she wants to be a corporate lobbyist. Or,
bearing in mind the calculus.
Run for office in another
wait,
state.
who wants to be
Stefanik.
A corporate lobbyist?
Well, Stefanik, well, no, don't forget, worked no. with
Karl Rove.
Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan.
Paul
yeah.
Ryan,
but before
too,
that,
so
she was a protege of Karl Rove. This is very Rovian. She's gone Rove.
No, I don't agree with you.
She's not looking out for the best interest of her Adirondack district.
Pat, and fear of my life, but I don't think you're right.
Okay.
Pat, do you like Elise Stefanik?
Oh, you can't. She can't answer that
question. I would not want to say whether I like her or not. She's always been good about giving me interviews, and
she's likable enough.
Yeah, she's always been very good about giving me interviews. She's always been willing to answer my questions. As for like or dislike, I don't interact with her enough to, you know, say she's a friend or she's not a friend.
All right.
And I try to do that with most politicians, because otherwise, you know, you compromise, you know, being non-biased.
I should have objected to Rosemary's question.
Exactly.
And asked that question be stricken from the record.
Bearing in mind the calculus, and David and Judith differ on what that calculus is for the coming election, in the last election, bearing in mind it's not necessarily going to be the same this time, what were the results, Stefanik and Cobb?
In the last election, Stefanik won over Cobb by 14 points. There was a Green candidate that I think it was 2 or 3 points
that's a sizable win.
Yes.
The calculus would have to change quite a bit for her not to win.
Well, what's different is Tedra Cobb is a very strong, effective candidate. She had the experience of her first run under her belt. She announced in good timing prior to Stefanik's rise on state television, right. Fox TV. I think Cobb... I think Tedra Cobb is going to be a serious candidate.
I don't get that.
Why is she different this time? She was a strong, all the good things you can say about her now, she was two years ago.
Well, I think she has $1 million in her bank account that she didn't have
running against.
And things have changed substantially. Look at where Trump is right now.
I think one of the key differences, though, is that Cobb right now does not have a primary challenge. Last time around, she faced up to 10 primary challenges that I think distracted all of the Democrats in the race. And that primary started, almost 18 months out from the election.
And it burned a lot of her money.
And it burned out, So far, no Democratic challengers. Cobb right now is running on a lot of the same issues as before, she says, because things haven't changed. So I think one of the key differences is no primary.
All right, Pat, I want everybody on the panel to give Pat Bradley a round of applause. Thank you for coming all the way. Well done.
Is it going to be a round of applause, or is it going to be like the shape of this desk?
What is that shape again, Aaron?
A septagon.
Right. Let's take a break. It's the roundtable panel. David Soares, Aaron Pacitti, Judith Thank, Rosemary Armeo. Did I say Alan Sharthock? He's also here. Let's take a break. We'll be back. It's James Armstrong. I'll be at the Linda tonight, thelinda.org. You want to find out more. It's John Primer and James Armstrong live in concert here at our favorite little venue in Albany, thelinda.org. This is the roundtable panel. It's 10:05. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. If you missed the beginning of the show, Joe had a little tumble, and he's going to be okay. The bionics are going in. It may be a couple of weeks, but he'll be able to run like 60 miles an hour once he's back. So it's pretty amazing. Rosemary Armeo is here, Alan Sharthock, Aaron Pacitti, Judah Thank, David Soares. It's the roundtable panel. And before we get to this stack of letters, anybody have anything they want to mention?
I just feel like I'm a sweat hog with a substitute teacher for the next couple of months. That's all. We miss Joe.
Yeah, we do.
Welcome back, Cotter. You don't remember Welcome Back, Cotter?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't get the Joe reference. That
Joe's a teacher. Joe's Mr. Cotter. Right. We got
the
Ray
cool
Graff.
That's a knock on
Ray.
We like you, Ray. We do like you, but we love Joe.
That's fine. You know, I'm not here to be liked.
No. I don't like this.
What?
You are the best.
I mean,
you are quite wonderful. And I don't like this business about one versus the other.
Who said it's a competition?
No, we're not going to do that. You know, that's all there is to it, and I am adamant about that.
Fine.
So, Soares and Judith, cut it out.
Can I change the tone of this conversation?
You must.
There's one comment that I wanted to make earlier, and we were talking about Sondland's contributions to the Trump campaign. We should stop, as a country, referring to large donations to various candidates as donations, but investments. Sondland's involved in real estate.
Bribes.
That investment got him an absolutely massive tax cut. That's not a blind donation this person upholds my values, and this is what I want to see the United States become. No, I'm investing in him so I can get a return on that.
But isn't that what political donations are all about since the beginning of time?
So let's stop calling them donations and call them investments.
But the thing about Sondland is he did not donate to Trump in the campaign. He supported some other Republican. After Trump won, he donated $1 million to the inaugural committee.
That's even
that
worse.
Was like a late payoff.
He invested $1 million in the
inaugural. That's called a penalty tax.
Penance.
This morning, President Trump was on state TV for 50 minutes. He called into Fox and Friends. Sorry to say the name.
Say state TV?
Yeah, Fox is state TV.
Judith.
And he's sorry, Ray. And he really attacked Sondland, which I think, you know, Trump always does this. When he most needs someone, he can't help himself. He attacks. And so I think you might, the truth serum may kick in even greater with Sondland over the next week.
Which is why Giuliani's comment that he was not going to have that happen to him, basically because he had insurance, quote, insurance. That's pretty interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Well, Michael Cohen had insurance, too. Just putting that out there.
And Manafort.
You know, but when you're talking about Donald Trump, okay, you're talking about an individual, and I've said this a number of times, who is so dumb out loud, right? Who does he turn on? He turns on the people who have all of the crumbs that lead, you know, law enforcement right to, you know, the gold, right?
Yeah, but David,
the
fact that Giuliani felt that he had to say that. Forget about whether or not Trump was going to turn on him. The fact that he said it and had to say it, which was an absolute warning, and then, of course, his counsel, he has to have the lawyer's lawyer has to have a lawyer, said his counsel said he was just kidding.
All right,
Trump
Rosemary,
has
you go
a
ahead.
Secret weapon, and his buddies, even the ones who are in jail or facing jail, know it, and that is the pardon. In the past week, he has let go of war criminals. Right. He's stopped sexual predators from going to jail. He's still got the final.
All right, let's read a couple of letters here. This stack is enormous. We'll never get to all of them, but we'll try here. Larry in Woodstock. Overwhelming evidence the president led subterfuge undermining the U.S. to benefit Russia and trying to rig the 2020 election. If Trump beats this, which he will, we'll be living in a different country. The United States will be dead. That goes into the Rosemary Armeo doomed category. That's from Larry in Woodstock.
It's a growing file.
Are you in there as well?
There's a reason we don't let Armeo do the weather.
Okay, that's not good
news. A 30% chance of fire and brimstone coming down, blizzard of frogs.
The sky will fall today.
This is from Linda in Hurley. I was totally impressed, by the way, that no matter how hard they tried, the men were not able to interrupt while she was speaking. And that is from about Dr. Hill. This is from Anthony in Beacon. Anthony writes, reports that GOP senators are discussing calling Hunter Biden when the presumed impeachment charges make it to the U.S. Senate. Seems like a distraction from the president's actions, but would any malfeasance revealed in Biden testimony pose an actual defense? Aren't those apples and oranges?
Yes.
Let's go to the prosecutor on that.
It's not only apples and oranges. It's just rather irrelevant.
It's
all irrelevant. Right?
That's interesting, though.
So what's the harm, then, of having him come in? That would shut up the Republicans.
It's not a matter of shutting up the Republicans. The Republicans said that these hearings were held in secret.
Secret,
right?
Yeah, the whole.
And then when the Democrats opened the door and put it out there, it's like, oh, now these hearings, you know, they weren't formally announced. So they continue to move the goalposts. Why would the Democrats ever play into anything that these disingenuous people would ever postulate?
I mean, the real question is, and I saw this in the National Review. It said, you know, the Republicans made such a huge mistake trying to defend, saying he didn't do what he clearly did. The question is it impeachable? And that's where the Republicans should be going. And
Trump won't let them.
Trump will not let them.
It was a perfect phone call.
Yes. He put these people in the worst position, by the way. You know, whether it's Stefanik or any of the Republicans that were there representing the Republicans. He put them in the worst position because you could actually sell. You could sell to the American public. Yes, conduct is bad, not the kind of conduct that is impeachable or not the kind of conduct that would support removal. Right.
Right?
They could have played that.
Right.
But what did the egomaniac want? No. My call was perfect. Even though you have evidence to the contrary.
Well, read Rich Lowry in the National Review. That's pretty much your point exactly. The Republicans, hey, the senators had lunch with the president yesterday. They're talking about the strategy for the coming trial, which everyone believes will happen. You know, they're not going to get 51 votes right away to say, let's throw this out.
What do you mean in America, the United States of America, defendants aren't allowed to buy pizza for the jury?
Well,
Susan Collins was in during lunch talking about more financial aid for the lobster industry in Maine. I think now you go in, you're going to get everything you asked for. Hey,
yeah,
I need a new highway. I need a library. We're going to name it after Donald Trump.
Ted Cruz was there. Romney was there.
As Pacitti would say, investments.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's That's right. This one's from Luke. Here's a question for people who speak for a living. Is there anybody here? Excluding their content, how impressive was the extemporaneous speech-making of Adam Schiff and Fiona Hill this week? I couldn't believe how good they were off the cuff. And you folks? Well, we're not so good. But I don't know if it was off the cuff, frankly.
No.
They scratch down notes and catchphrases. They
know what they're talking about, and they're confident.
Well, let's remember, too, that there was a hearing that took place that they've had transcripts for, and so they were able to really put together a strong closing argument. I will tell you that the person who impressed me the most, I think, this week, I shouldn't say the most, but a person who impressed me was Maloney. Because he had a number of very, very interesting points.
That exchange where he said, what was this? And finally, Sondland said, okay, Trump benefits.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was that incredulous. The Volcker, call it a cross-examination, was rather interesting, too, because Volcker stood there and said, wait a minute, you never linked Burisma, the gas company.
Burisma.
You never linked that with Biden?
No, I never did.
So you've had over a dozen conversations and you never put that together? Nope.
Adam Schiff should get an award. I don't know. You can't give him a Nobel Prize, but I have never seen anything quite as impressive as what he's been doing. I also agree with whoever just said Peter Welch has done a terrific job. He was strong, I thought, yesterday.
Yeah. The thing about Sean Patrick Maloney is, who's a former colleague of mine, he's very, very smart. He won in Sue Kelly's district, which is heavily Republican, Lower Hudson Valley. And in the last election, Trump won his district. So he's not like Jerry Nadler, who's representing the Upper West Side.
Right.
He's representing a Trump district. And still, I think he was very articulate.
And to be fair and balanced, because I interview him on the Congressional Corner all the time, his views are quite moderate in many ways. So to see him speak out here is impressive.
Have you ever had Elise Stefanik on the Congressional Corner?
I have, but she's very hard for Ian to get a hold of and to be on the air with us. And it may well be that what Pat Bradley just said is right. I mean, she doesn't want to take chances where she doesn't have to.
Well, listening to Pat Bradley's description of her district, it sounded to me like Crimea, New York. Ian's having a hard time getting a hold of her, it might just be because there's no phones all the way out there.
It's a beautiful district. This will be unpopular, but I actually think Devin Nunes has been amazingly effective for the other side. He speaks colorfully, and he's always interesting. When he goes to Adam Schiff, okay, now we'll switch over to the chairman here for story time. It's great. I love it.
I could not disagree more.
I know I said it would be unpopular. That's so demeaning,
of course. So no, I couldn't disagree more. I think everybody's sitting there saying, give me something to throw at the television or give me something to throw at the radio. He's in your house, but not in parts of America.
You'd be amazed.
That's right.
He's handily won re-election, and I think this is why. He is a fantastic speaker.
You are. Let me tell you something. You must be driving to Great Barrington to hang out at Alan's favorite weed shop if you thought that guy was brilliant. Okay, boy, the bar is low.
I didn't say brilliant.
Rosemary,
come on, that's not
Mayo.
Fair.
The bar is very low.
You put words
effective.
In my head. Unlike Jim Jordan, who's just aggressive, and I hate him. Nunes is polite. He's persistent. He repeats his points over and over again. It's amazingly effective as a speaker.
Was your favorite?
Yes, he was. Right.
One at a time.
Was your favorite dwarf Dopey?
He was hiding in the weeds at the White House. That's right.
He lost his chairpersonship.
He is so foolish. I find him to be. I mean, Jim Jordan at least it's rapid fire cross examination because rapid fire cross examination is not intended to elicit information from. I also want to say
that I think that it's wrong to say that all these people are practiced and poised. You're there in front of a national audience. You've got a bank of photographers right in your face. And Vindman, for example, was shaking when he began. I think it's incredibly nerve-wracking. Right. And to come off as articulate as they did is a big accomplishment.
New rule. Let's all wait our turn to speak. It's driving me crazy. I'm going to...
How do we know what...
Yeah, we need Joe back.
How do we...
Oh, because he allows it?
Sorry. Rosemary.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I'm
Your
sorry,
Honor,
Howard.
I object. This one's from Oliver. Once it was clear Rudy Giuliani was acting as a go-between, the impeachment committee should have postponed all other witnesses and called Giuliani. He could not ignore the subpoena on a claim of executive privilege, since he is Trump's personal lawyer and not a member of the government. Nor were his conversations with ambassadors and others subject to attorney-client privilege, since it's obvious he was not in their employ as a lawyer or vice versa.
So just stop it. He's not coming on. He's not going to do what he's going to say. No.
Yeah, he's ignoring it.
Don't you speak to Oliver that way.
Sorry, Oliver.
All right, fine.
That's adorable.
All right. Remind me who Oliver is?
Who's the guy who wrote the letter that you were complaining about?
No longer an AMC contributor. Yeah. It's just that he was subpoenaed and he's ignoring the subpoena.
I think again, in terms of reforms moving forward, one of the things you're going to see is more legislation passed that is going to be designed to prevent this kind of behavior on the part of the executive. It's going to call for more expedited judicial processes.
Okay, this one is from Jason in Amherst. Good morning. So where has A.G. Barr been the last few weeks of the impeachment hearings? A report in the Daily Kos claims Barr has been preparing a report that will severely undermine the impeachment proceedings. We know he hasn't the integrity to do the right thing, so we must count on Barr to do his best to attempt to delegitimize the impeachment process. We did see the FBI's Russia probe will be released next month. Justice Department, December 9th.
He's working on his own investigation and... hoping to distract.
They had a letter sent to Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday, and apparently Inspector General Horowitz will be in front of the Senate on the 11th to discuss the findings of the report.
If today's any indication, the little taste we got of it, it doesn't seem to be much. It's a 400-page report. But today was, there was a misdeed, but the guy who did it was let go, and it didn't substantially affect the outcome.
We live in a bizarre world.
But they wanted to roll that out yesterday to counter Dr. Fiona Hill.
Of course.
This one is from Tricia. Dr. Hill's compelling testimony is the subject. Another compelling moment yesterday in the hearing was when Dr. Hill realized and pointed out that her disagreements with Ambassador Sondland and others were because they were all on a domestic political errand, and she and her group were conducting international diplomacy. This was a moment of undeniable truth, and this panel has mentioned that.
I think that phrase, domestic political errand, is going to be on bumper stickers. I also think that lots of little girls in the United States and England over the next few months will be named Fiona.
Well, she combined it with, I was wrong. I yelled at him, but he was right. We weren't doing the same thing. I was on a mission like from God, and he was like on this domestic, task.
I loved her voice. I would love to have her record the underwriting for the roundtable. She's got the greatest accent in the world.
Well, she might be available. She left the White House.
She still works for the NSC, right? This is from John. Good morning, esteemed panel, and get better soon, Joe. Can someone give a brief overview of how a Senate trial would differ from impeachment hearings, specifically how vocal and participatory would senators be allowed to be? And that is from John.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because as we sit here today, the Senate has been in closed-door meetings. When I say the Senate, I mean the leader, Mitch McConnell,
under his shell,
has been in closed door meetings attempting to establish the parameters.
How long it would run?
How long it's going to run the entire structure. Now, what's interesting here is I don't expect whatever process is put in place by Mitch McConnell to be one that I would consider fair and equitable, but it's going to be interesting to see what Judge Roberts how he will handle, you know, these proceedings, because ultimately he will be the judge.
All right. This one is from George. We only have a couple more minutes here. This is from George, who says, can you imagine the favor that Bolton could extract from Trump for agreeing to continue to refuse to testify? He has no reason not to flip. He has no future to worry about like Pence or Pompeo. The sky is the limit. That's from George.
He met, by the way, Ray, with the president. That's been in the news. So obviously Trump is concerned enough to make sure that he has some controls on Bolton.
Judith, you heard of that?
I think that news report was they met over the summer before Bolton was fired.
No, I think it was recent? Contemporary, but I may be wrong.
I will tell you right now, the Bolton's not looking for his next move because he's going to be retired and in running into the sunset. Bolton is looking for the most massive sales for his right. book because they have been steadily trickling.
Okay.
He tweeted this morning after a two-month
little bits, little teasers have been coming out about his book that he's personally tweeting about.
If the future of the nation is in Bolton's hands, we're all in big trouble.
Bolton's a good guy. It's his mustache.
All right, this one's from Linda. I had this question earlier and forgot to mention it because that's the way I roll. Linda writes, during an impeachment trial in the Senate, will Mulvaney, Pompeo, etc., be required to testify, and especially Trump?
They won't be required to testify. I don't see how this administration could get away with providing witnesses for purposes of the actual trial, but not provide them for purposes of the impeachment proceeding. Plus, providing these witnesses is also going to call for the
minority
exposure of a lot of documents and a lot of materials that the White House is currently, you know,
hiding
and burning to some extent.
I agree with you.
All right, this one's from Ellen, and I think we'll have to wrap it up after this one. Panel, sorry to hear about Joe. Hope he returns soon. Yeah, you and me both. On House process, do we think Nadler on Judiciary will just pass through to impeachment without holding hearings first? Bolton and others could testify before the Judiciary Committee filling out the case against Trump. I can't imagine Nadler letting go of this opportunity to hold his own hearings with all his experience.
Oh God!
You got to believe that Nancy Pelosi will have something to say about that.
So I disagreed with someone who's currently on the air with us right now. I'm not going to mention any names. When I was talking about how Nadler was just terrible, god awful, and he was being run over, you know, during all of the various hearings he was holding prior to the impeachment hearings. And the best thing that Nancy Pelosi did was to get a former prosecutor to hold these proceedings. If we go back to a Nadler, you know, version of what we've just witnessed, forget about it.
All right, Alan, I'll let you get the last word in here on that one.
Well, I think David's got a very good point, but I do think Nadler wants to remain the chairman of that very important committee. And I don't think he has the, cojones to take on Nancy.
There's the secret word right before the end of the show. Well done, Alan. Aaron Pacitti, when's the gig and where is it?
6 o'clock tonight at Brown's Waloomsack Tap Room in Hoosick Falls.
Can you spell Waloomsack?
Waloomsack.
At the wonderful Cafe Lena, which deserves everybody's support, as does WAMC, and I'm looking forward to seeing all the WAMCers there.
Well, thanks to Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, Judith Inc., Aaron Pacitti, and David Soares. Thank you for listening. Much more Roundtable to come in a moment.